Gosh.
At least another 2 hours. And while I'm waiting for this flood of phone calls to come in, let's hear a little of Johnny Smith.
Like a scattered trash, never knowing what to do when we pass. When we pass, do I stare? Do I look away? I don't know. I ain't got very much to say to you. I'll give a nickel, I'll give a dime. I'll say I'm sorry, I haven't got the time for you. All the bricks in the window are all turning gray. The wind is blowing, I can't look away. All the stench of the homeless and the rotting streets are cast upon me like the shoes on my feet. Shoes on my feet. He's got his stocks and his mutual funds, and he'll tell you that his life is so much fun. So much fun. He's got an ulcer and an addicted wife, and little Johnny's doing 25 years to life. Here's the life. He's got a Lexus and a lot of cash, but the Christians say that stuff just won't last. It just won't last. So why do so many covet that stuff? I guess that Jesus just can't earn above. Earn above. Bricks in the window are all turning gray. The wind is blowing, I can't look away. All the stench of the homeless and the rotting streets are cast upon me like the shoes on my feet. Shoes on my feet. Get a job, you lazy bum. Can't you tell that life is so much fun? So much fun. Get a Lexus and get some cash. All your friends will think you made the big time at last. Big time at last. Now don't you worry, don't you fret, 'cause you ain't seen nothing yet. Save your nickels and save your time. Your God dollar bill will always come on time for you. All the bricks in the window are all turning gray. The wind is blowing, I can't look away. All the stench of the homeless and the rotting streets are cast upon me like a shoes on my feet. We treat the homeless like discarded trash. We treat the homeless like discarded trash.
But
I'm talking to another guitarist who doesn't have his guitar with him, CJ. Hey, CJ.
So what's with the signs on either end of the mall with they probably spent $200 a piece or $250 or $300 on them? It says the noise ordinance strictly enforced. And we just heard a motorcycle go by, and we couldn't converse between one another because of its sound.
I think the real threat here is that obnoxious music coming from that man over
it's
there.
It's awful. It's just disgraceful. It's not anywhere near ugly enough for these people in Santa Cruz. I think it's quite horrible.
It's kind of out of place. We need more motorcycles and less music. That's what I say.
More motorcycles, more boom boom cars. Yeah. Let's hear some loud hip hop. I think you should turn it up. Actually,
more upscale restaurants.
Doing. They're going to do a lot of business if there's nothing to come down here for. And the noise will help bring the people in.
If their ears burst, they will come.
Yeah, I think so.
There's no question about it. Is there anything else happening down here, CJ?
Nothing else. It's just they just placed those signs down together in the mall that they could have fed somebody with.
And or maybe just actually ticketed a motorcyclist or two, or just told them, you got to put some mufflers on your fucking motorcycles.
Bad motorcycle.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, bad motorcycle will work.
It is a little loud. The motorcycle should not be doing their thing on that.
All of it's too loud, and they're not doing anything. Like, they'd rather arrest the skateboarders.
Yeah, well, skateboarders are more of a serious problem.
Robert, I got to go.
We're talking to a rather fiery individual. Your name, sir?
Yeah, Bill.
And Bill, here you are seated calmly on a bench in front of Borders, but you say that the police have had a word with you.
What did you get me into? They had a word with me. They did.
What exactly did they say to you, Bill?
They just said that you should not do that on Pacific Avenue.
What were you doing? Were you assaulting a merchant?
I was not doing anything of the sort.
Urinating on some customer?
Nothing near.
What exactly were you doing?
I was juggling fire.
Juggling fire. Now, how many fires were you juggling in a single?
Two of them, actually.
And how long ago were you doing this?
A couple weeks ago.
And what did these police officers say to you?
That I shouldn't be juggling on Pacific Avenue with fire.
Not juggling, period, or not juggling with fire?
With fire. Yes.
Interesting. You're not allowed to bounce a rubber ball on the sidewalk on Pacific Avenue.
Not even allowed to bounce a rubber ball. I wonder if they have done a fire bouncing ball.
They have no. This is the town without balls.
No
balls in Santa Cruz.
No balls in Santa Cruz.
Only no ovaries either.
They'll take them away. They'll take your balls away.
What is your name, ma'am?
I'm Ralston.
Ralston, are you an old-time Santa Cruzan or a new-timer?
A new-timer traveler.
And I want to clarify that the juggler got hassled on May 31st. This is an older tape, so due to the juggling arrest of Tom Noddy and the public embarrassment at the prospect of an influx of jugglers on September 5th and 6th might have had on the city's tourist image, they passed an emergency ordinance that eliminated the juggling ban. Of course, you still have the ball bouncing ban, and you still have the sitting ban, the sleeping ban, the panhandling ban. It's not accurate to say it's a complete ban, but it's pretty restrictive, as we've talked about earlier in the show. And this juggling, however, is now legal. So, you can't hacky sack, but you certainly can juggle. But don't try juggling with your feet. I guess that would be considered to be inappropriate. Anyway, a lot of interesting interviews coming up. I'm going to play some now shortly from the Tuesday event that happened between 5 and 8. I think it's Santa Cruz Night Out, I believe, is what it's called. And there's a sort of chapter 2 of that is coming up day after tomorrow, next Tuesday, downtown. The block in front of the Del Mar Theater will again be closed off at some astronomical cost to Greg Kindig's organization, the Coalition for a Community Commons. Hats off to them. There was illegal chalking in the street, people playing hopscotch, frisbee. It was really shocking, the kind of behavior that went on. And the police were turning a blind eye, even to a chalker who chalked in front of the downtown informant center, the downtown host, downtown surveillance center, enraging the local purple shirts. Those are the folks who are the hosts, paid by the city, the Downtown Management Corporation. They're the Business Improvement District Goon Squad of our downtown neighborhood. They run around snitching people out for serious crimes like sitting down on a planter, send people into a felony court for sales of less than an ounce of marijuana, resulting in stay-away orders from the mall. It's the new downtown Santa Cruz that hopefully the Coalition for Community Commons will be fighting in terms of simply opening up the space and returning the more traditional, more open, more inclusive attitudes that were there. If you want to talk about this issue, you still have an option. It's 427-3772 is the call-in number. We may actually be getting on the line some activists, local activists, talking about such things as the Pinto case and the CPS update. We've had some interesting news on CPS, which I'm hoping Roxanne Akista-Pache may get up with us on. But first, a couple updates from me. Tuesday is not just this Santa Cruz night out. And I want to actually, what I'll do is I'm going to go on the web here and see exactly what the specific subject is going to be. This is a good website to remember, www.santacruz.indymedia.org, a very good website, and you can actually post on it and you can put your own stories, your own thoughts on it. I can't seem to find it here. Let's go back and see if we can find it. www.santacruz.indymedia.org. Let's see if we can find that website. Looks like it's right here. And Santa Cruz Night Out is the top story. It's a community event downtown where families and visitors will enjoy a variety of things, music and such. We provided brownies, Huff, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom did last week. Got compliments of Joe Schultz. Thank you, Joe. 19th is going to be called Kids Night Out. It's a family music, storytellers, face painting, puppetry, and juggling. And there's going to be Kuzanga Marimba Band, Santa Cruz Story Teller Swap. You can hear stories by various tale tellers. Children's Folklorico Dancers from the Children's Learning Museum, the People's Puppet Theater, face painting, and jugglers. And again, it's described as a community-based event downtown where families and visitors will enjoy a variety of events showcasing the diverse cultural talents of Santa Cruz. And it's again, it's costing a huge amount of money for these folks, and it'll be over after next Tuesday. I'm glad they're doing it. I'm just wondering, what's next? How can we actually get them to close the mall on a regular basis? What is it? For years, we've been trying to get a plaza downtown. That was abandoned in favor of just shutting down the mall for a pedestrian mall. That was abandoned in favor of a one-block demonstration project. How many retreats are we going to do before we end up with absolutely nothing at all? And I don't know, but I mean, I say come on down on Tuesday. I'll be down there doing some tabling. We'll be doing some more sampling and interviews around the Illegal to be Homeless report. That's the criminalization of homelessness in the United States, August 2003, which got some interesting stuff. I may be reading from that a little bit later. After the announcements, or maybe after another item or two. The report is titled, No Sitting, Lying, Leaning, Panhandling, Loitering, Camping, Obstructing the Sidewalk, Spitting, Storing Property, Street Performing. The Police Are Watching. That's, again, a national report published by the National Coalition for the Homeless in Washington, D.C., surveying, 147 communities in 42 states, and it documents the widespread trend of the violations of the basic human rights of people experiencing homelessness in those states, Puerto Rico and the District of Columbia. Now, a little bit of reading on this now. Through the passage of laws which are unconstitutional, the selective enforcement of existing laws, arbitrary police practices, and discriminatory public regulations, people experiencing homelessness face overwhelming hardships in addition to the daily struggle for survival. Instead of spending precious public resources and funding to address the significant lack of affordable housing in this country, local governments in urban, suburban, and rural areas divert these funds to police departments and local business improvement districts, or BIDs, as you heard Robert Letterman talking about for the last hour, which penalize people for being homeless. In addition to continuing to document this trend, this report documents the connections between the creation of a public environment of intolerance and the increasing danger of living on the streets that results from this attitude towards people experiencing homelessness. This report continues to investigate and present the evidence that criminalization is not only a local issue, but also a national one that demands a federal response. we have asserted and continue to assert that a pattern and practice of civil rights violations and unconstitutional behaviors by local government authorities, including the police and other city agencies, exist in many cities around the country. These practices exact enormous economic, social, and individual costs and do nothing to alleviate the root causes of homelessness. The Bush administration's reduction of funding and tax funds, the elimination of necessary services, and the continued gentrification of subsidized housing has moved this country backwards in responding to the urgent needs of deepening poverty. The status of this country's economy and the growing rate of unemployment makes the situation for many people experiencing homelessness especially grave, and makes the recommendations of this report especially timely. With the unemployment rate at the highest it has been since the early 1990s and cuts in funding for service-providing organizations, the deepening economic recession gives no indication of improving the plight of those individuals without jobs or without homes. The use of public space, including sleeping outside and in cars parked on public streets, is being increasingly limited. For those people who must live in public spaces without access to shelter, public restrooms, and places to store their belongings, the implications continue to be disastrous. In light of the state of the current economy and of the increasing hostility toward people experiencing homelessness, the National Coalition for the Homeless, state and city coalitions, and local member organizations believe that working towards ending the causes of homelessness, not simply removing homeless people from view, is cost-effective, not to mention just. And there's a lot more good stuff in here. Gosh. National Coalition for the Homeless, established in 1984, is the oldest national organization founded to advocate on behalf of people who are homeless. National Coalition for the Homeless is comprised of local and statewide homeless coalitions, service providers, faith-based organizations, grassroots activists, and people experiencing homelessness. In 2002, NCH and the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty released a report examining and documenting the criminalization of acts necessary to survival when committed in public space. Because people experiencing homelessness must live and survive in public space, this criminalization directly and almost solely applies to them. Since the release of that report, many of the cities examined have passed new ordinances or become stricter in the enforcement of pre-existing legislation, and of course, Santa Cruz is one of those. The Riley Porter unattended property law, the vast expansion of the forbidden zones, more than doubling the forbidden zone, making, as again I said before, 95% of most of the downtown sidewalks and 100% of virtually all the other sidewalks in town that are adjacent to businesses unusable for sitting down, for a person who wishes to peacefully exercise the First Amendment right to ask for help, either verbally or silently, with a sign. All of it is illegal under the got-to-be 14 feet from a building rule. As a result of the pressure of downtown business interests, the report continues, and in some cases tourism, local governments regulate homelessness by attempting to reduce its visibility through strict enforcement of so-called quality of life laws, as well as physically relocating people living on the streets. The enforcers of these ordinances, whether city park officials or police officers, have little or no training or knowledge of existing local resources, available services, or effective techniques for working with people who may be experiencing mental health, chemical dependency, or chronic medical issues. As free voluntary treatment options disappear, cities are choosing jail to manage the, quote, homeless problem instead of addressing the root causes of homelessness. This new report continues the effort to reveal discriminatory local practices which have frequently been challenged and modified but continue to reemerge, often in a more aggressive and harmful form. Keep your eyes tuned for the new privatization of the O'Neill's public area across from the Cinema 9. Keep your eyes peeled for the new harassment of food servers being brought to you by our own local business improvement district, the Downtown Association. Keep your eyes peeled for a return of a police crackdown along a rewritten move-along law as they go after Steve Argue in early September. And I myself will be going to court day after tomorrow to do a Murguia motion. Actually, the attorney who's volunteering to help me, Tony Bull, is going to do that. Thank you, Tony. And I'll talk a little more about that. This Illegal to be Homeless report is going to be put in the library today in case you want to read it. Just ask the reference librarian. They may take a little while to bind it, and sometimes it takes 6 months, actually, to tell them to get off the stick. It shouldn't be that long. And have a look at it. It's a very interesting report. And again, as I said, it details a lot of different things in different cities. The report on Santa Cruz, unfortunately, is not as accurate as it could be in spite of all our good efforts. But we have our own report we've issued called, what is it, Even More Illegal to Be Homeless in Santa Cruz, and it's got four single-spaced pages of documented harassment stuff that's been going down in the last year and a half, much of which many of you may have already read through flyers we distribute on the street at our table when they're not running us around every hour under the move-along law, arresting us for having amplified sound when we're trying to do a video display, or perhaps ticketing local supporters who are sitting nearby on what was the seating area outside the Pacific Trading Company, but what is now a fenced area where you're not allowed to sit so that the Pacific Trading Company can more comfortably conduct its business indoors. So, what's happening on Tuesday? Well, as I said, of course, it's Santa Cruz night out, but it's also, I'll be going to court at, I believe it's 8:30 in the morning in Department 2 to seek a Murguia motion. That's a motion which will ask for discovery to show selective enforcement of the law. I was arrested, non-custodially arrested, which means cited. Let's be accurate. I wasn't taken to jail and I wasn't handcuffed, but I was held against my will for a period of time by two police officers who wanted to essentially ticket me for the crime of crossing Mission Street between the town clock and the top of the hill as I was returning from the massive peace rally on February 15th. I've talked about this before. What's new is that, first of all, the case, of course, has been dragged through the courts since February. They aren't dropping the case, even though the case is defective, both because of the law itself. I wasn't jaywalking, as they specified. Jaywalking requires, interestingly enough, technically, that you walk between two stoplights. And I wasn't. There was not two stoplights there. There was actually crosswalks which were widely separated. They can also charge you with interfering with traffic if you actually are interfering with traffic, but I was doing neither, and they didn't charge me with that. Who knows? Sergeant Baker may go back and amend that. Actually, Sergeant Baker didn't do it. It was Officer Martin, and we'll see what Officer Martin does. Or the city attorney's office, since they're the one who is spending hundreds of dollars on this issue and continue to spend more city money, when the obvious thing for them to do is to drop the charge, apologize, state they will attempt not to harass people who happen to walk across the street with a t-shirt that says warning police in area coming back from a police rally and who happened to be me. I may be wrong, but I think there may have been a certain selectivity of it. Though I've got to be candid too, Officer Martin warned me not to cross the street where I was crossing it, and I in essence crossed anyway because I felt it wasn't illegal and it was an unreasonable request on his part. So I think the real crime I had was disobeying a police officer's orders. Now, I always thought I wasn't in the Army, and I always thought that civilians, obey the Constitution, not the police department. But, of course, in Santa Cruz, that's not really the case. You risk arrest or ticketing if you disobey the police department. So it requires a certain willingness to face those consequences, and unfortunately, that's what I'm in the midst of. And if you want to check it out, come to court, 10 a.m., Tuesday, August 19th, and you'll get to see this motion, this Murguia motion, argued before Commissioner Siegel. Actually, to be very candid, we're probably just going to try to get a continuance, so though it goes to court, there may not be a lot happening. Maybe we'll distribute flyers to local court people about their rights under jury nullification. That's something that they should know about. And for those of you who don't know, that's the right to just say no to a judge in a prosecution, even if they prove beyond a shadow of a doubt that the specific law was violated and that they people did indeed use medical marijuana or use marijuana for a recreational purpose. You still don't have to find them guilty. You can say not guilty, and you don't have to give a reason. It's as simple as that. And people know that, the drug war will be dead. When they know that and they're willing to do that, then the drug war will be dead. And of course, that means standing up to a judge, standing up to a prosecutor, and standing up to your fellow jurors, which can be difficult. It also means getting on the jury in the first place, which can also be difficult. Thursday, the 21st, and this date could be wrong. It could be the 20th, and hopefully we'll get clearer information on that. For more information, call the Huff line at 423-HUFF, 423-4833. That's Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. Becky Johnson will be going back to court. This is the criminal chalker who was twice convicted of chalking on the sidewalk, or actually was on both times on the sidewalk, political messages such as sleep is not a crime, which the Downtown Business Association District's local Gestaperina, Julie Hindi, didn't much like. So she filled out a complaint against Becky. They took her to court. On one occasion, they took her to jail and held her on $1,000 bail. That was due to the good work of Mia Duquette, Parks and Rec employee who continues to snitch people out for chalking. And I mention this because Mia is a local activist, or poses as a local activist. She's often seen in the company of Grant Wilson, who is also a local activist. And I'm not saying Grant is responsible for what Mia does. Mia is responsible for what Mia does. And when Mia uses her position to harass people, or even does so because she says it's just her job, she needs to be called by the activist community on that. I saw her, for instance, at the impeachment rally the other day. That's the Friday impeachment rally, and we're going to be playing a little bit from that rally as well. Representative Farr came and put everybody to sleep for a long period of time, and I suppose he said some things that may be of interest. I was mostly outside flyering, and I think that activist Becky Johnson, who was videotaping, took some good tape, and she's queued up a tape for us. We can play some of that. In fact, I think I'm going to do that immediately after this brief introduction, and it ain't so brief, it looks like. In case you want to interrupt my tirade, or you have some thoughts on this, you can call at 427-3772. Also, John Maurer is not only going to trial for a sign that was in his hat that said, fuck the pigs. He wasn't assaulting people. He wasn't screaming at people. He wasn't running into a children's school giving away big signs that said, fuck. He was on the public sidewalk after having been harassed with four tickets from the police, essentially move along kind of things, when he just got thoroughly disgusted and put a little sign in his hat that said, fuck the pigs, parentheses, police, for those who didn't know what that meant. And as a consequence, according to his attorney, Paul Sanford, who volunteered for this case, he got two citations, the second citation being a misdemeanor. So he faces up to a year in jail for this crime of criticizing the police department with strong language in a silent sign. To me, this is really the most clear application of what we heard Robert Letterman saying, that if you don't exercise your rights, you're going to lose them. And if we don't support people who are exercising their rights, we're going to lose the right to exercise our own rights. So he's going into court to challenge this on constitutional grounds the week after next, I believe. There's going to be some papers filed, and it's actually not going to come up till the end of September. But John Maurer, if you're listening to my broadcast, please call your attorney, Paul Sanford. And if anybody knows John and you see him on the streets, tell him to call Paul immediately. That's something he needs to do. Another quick announcement. A week from today, from 4 to 6, Old Lady Scar Arms informs me that there's going to be a Kennedy Rotkin Jamboree. Yes, that's Squawk Box Scott Kennedy and Riot Act Mike Rotkin, the vice mayor and the old-time city council member Mike Rotkin, who gave us the move along or get arrested every 61 minutes law, as well as the entire other panoply of ask for a dime after dark, get a ticket, ask twice, go to jail for up to a year. These two guarantors of the Constitution and big supporters of nonviolence and labor rights are going to be on the Old Lady Scar Arms show answering questions by telephone, and also apparently, if it's possible, I'm not quite sure if she was talking to me about this last night, debating with activist and, I guess, assembly candidate Joe Williams, who's also a street performer and a peace activist. And Joe's been on my show, really gave a great roundup to the new permit ordinances that were secretly concocted, and secretly is the word, they were just concocted and announced with no public process, by Scott Kennedy and his cronies inside the staff, the city staff. That's all going to be on the 24th of August, next Sunday at 4 o'clock, 4 to 6. You can call in on that show. I would have liked to have had Kennedy and or Rotkin on my show debating these things, but they wouldn't return my calls. Perhaps they feel that it's just not the right atmosphere for them to be in. I'm hoping that old lady Scarums can do battle with them in a good way. I think she's going to need a lot of support, though. These guys are clever, shifty, fast-talking, and they have an encyclopedic knowledge of these laws and how to slide around them. That's how they keep getting reelected and appealing to different constituencies, as they know how to talk to the public. Hopefully, people are not going to stand for that, and hopefully Joe will be able to take a militant stand. Joe does kind of different kinds of acts. So one day, he's Mr. Sweet Guy before the city council. The next, he's reading the riot act to Rotkin instead of getting the riot act from him. By the way, the reason I call him Riot Act Mike Rotkin is because he has threatened to have me arrested at city council for using the names of city council members in speeches. In fact, Scott Kennedy recently repressed that kind of behavior at city council from Joe Williams, from Steve Argue, actually, and then from Joe Williams, when they tried to talk about the failure of the city council to meet their commitments to give over a second look at the downtown ordinances, as they were obliged to do and refused to do this last July. Mayor Riley has assured us with a smile that that may be on the agenda in September, and maybe someday they'll talk about getting out of Iraq, and maybe they'll talk about putting some teeth in the Anti-Patriot Act, and, you know, maybe. If you want to call any of these folks, and I suggest you do, the number to call is 420-5022. That's for Mayor Smiley Riley, the merchant's friend, and council member and vice mayor Scott Kennedy is 420-5028. If you don't remember those numbers, there's a sort of one simple catch-all number that will put you through to the city council and each of these council members, 420-5020. 420-5020. Call them up. Tell them time to open up the closed budget hearings that they're holding secret meetings behind closed doors about, not allowing the public in. They're going to come back with their finished agenda in the second week in September, and they'll get to ram it down your throat. That's unfortunately the way the city council usually proceeds. And unless they've gotten a lot of flack on this, they're going to be proceeding in the same way. That's what they do. Also want to make the announcement, I may have mentioned this before, don't think I have, that Y Swami Y, the eccentric mystic man of the East who showed up at a Huff boycott bigotry, brownies against bigotry rally downtown about 3 or 4 weeks ago, and who I played a brief selection from, is going to be appearing at the September 5th Friday show, which Tom Noddy and the Street Performers are running at the Loudon Nelson Center. It's going to be $10 to get in, but I can assure you that the 5 to 10 minutes that he's on the platform will be the most memorable moments of the entire performance. The Swami is a man deeply versed in the philosophies of the East and applies them with a very sagacious acumen to the situation in Santa Cruz. You might want to check him out. Costs $10 to get in. We'd like to see the show on the streets, but as Tom Noddy told me, organize it yourself and take it out there. And unfortunately, I don't have those organizing skills. So if anybody wants to organize a show on the streets about, you know, involving street performers, or maybe do a march, that's something I would certainly want to get behind and support. As I want to support the Loudon Nelson event, September 5th and 6th, which is being held indoors and will be benefiting street performers and will be a showcase for folks who don't normally have the opportunity to perform on stage quite this way, and will be doing so with headliners like the Flying Karamazov Brothers. Tom Noddy was invited on this show. Who knows? He may be listening in now. He may not. The show goes on for hours, as most of you who are listening to it regularly know. But he and anyone else who wants to discuss these topics, wants to give more information about the upcoming performance, welcome to call in. And our call-in number is 427-3772. Let's hear some interviews from the street. In fact, let's pick up from where we left off on Thursday, where we were playing for you some cuts from last Tuesday's Santa Cruz Night Out and a Huff tabling effort that began in front of the Pacific Trading Company, urging people to boycott that business, as well as Jackson's Shoes, for their collusion in eliminating seating space downtown at your expense, spending $6,600 out of the police department budget to move a fence 4 inches so 20 seating spaces are gone, as well as supporting laws that criminalize the presence of poor and homeless people as street performers and political activists in most of the public spaces. Here's some more cuts from that particular day.
Okay. Excuse me. Do you mind if I interview you?
Do you have to know my name and everything?
I don't think so.
Talk to me. What do you want to say?
Okay. So you're just an anonymous citizen, right?
Yes, I am.
So you were talking to me about how...
I'm a Santa Cruz citizen, but...
You're what?
I'm a Santa Cruz citizen.
Oh, good. And you were talking to me about how the police attitude toward the public and towards people who break minor laws has really changed.
It's gotten too tic-tacky, you know, small little offenses that can be just like verbal warnings. There's instances, you know, and I know, you know, and a lot of circumstances where, there could be a verbal warning and could be taken care of, but, you know, with a strict, with all these other strict little rules around town, like hacksacking and not be able to sit in certain places for certain periods of time, you know, for rest or something, or to associate with other people, try to find out what's going on, how they can get services from the public or stuff like that, and they can't assimilate like that, you know, even though they're doing absolutely nothing wrong or they're being completely harmless. So when the cops pull you over for a small offenses, they're giving you tickets and they're not giving you second chances anymore. You know, where in other cities, I'm sure you get, you know, they even oversee it. You know, and once in a while they'll feel, you know, they should pull over. You know, take care of the problem. You know, and instead of giving a ticket, that just aggravates people more around the city, you know?
Yeah. Recently?
Okay, we're talking with...
Kuo.
Kuo, it's about 15 to 7 in front of the PTC, Pacific Trading Company. What's up?
Well, first of all, Pam Bechtel told me I can't do this, which is pouring water on the lingam that I usually sit in front of.
And we're talking about this sort of bizarre-looking head statue that's in front of the Pacific Trading Company next to the street.
Yeah, I was told I can't do that, so I want to have my civil religious rights restored.
And you've just, in fact, poured water on this statue. Now, why did you say, what did you say was illegal about that? Did she cite a code section?
No, I'm just saying it's not mine. Something like that.
It's not yours. Well, this is actually public property, so in a way, everyone has equal access to it. Unless you're destroying it or defacing it, I don't think pouring water on it injures it in any way.
Yeah, I don't think so either. And I've never been to India, but that's what they do. They bathe the lingam. So that's what I was trying to do. Second,
they wet the lingam?
Bathe it?
Bathe the lingam, I got you.
Yeah, but like I need more of it.
You have some tickets here showing me.
Yes, I woke up this morning and was given a ticket. It's for sleeping. Between, well, when people normally sleep.
11 to 8:30 in the morning.
Yes, I was over by Rhythm Fusion and I was wondering what you can do about it, or should I take it to trial or whatever. I have to go to trial in September between the...
Is it 8:26 a.m.? Were you warned by the officer who's... Badge 155.
Is it Velasquez?
Something like
His
that.
Name is not there, but did he say that he was... Had he spoken to you before about this issue?
Not him, about that. I'm not sure I've ever spoken with him before, but he told me don't pick a better place to sleep. I told him I found it good there when it rains, because sometimes I've been here in the winter, and it's currently the summer, and, told me not to sleep there and gave me a ticket for it.
Had he told you not to sleep before he gave you the ticket and then come back, or?
No. He woke me up and pulled out his book.
Did he say they're going to complain?
I'm not sure. Maybe a few different people. This is probably my first offense. So.
But did he say in this particular occasion that he had gotten a call that told him to come out and speak to you?
Not that I can remember. And second, after I took it to my lawyer's office at 2103 North Pacific, William Bellport, I guess, I was crossing the street to go to the Homeless Persons Health Project, and I got one for a vehicle code when I don't even know how to drive, for crossing, I guess against a red light or something. And that guy is named A. Martin. So I was like...
Officer Martin, he gave me a ticket for jaywalking back on February 15th. I'm finding it in court on August 22nd, actually, interestingly enough. And when was this? This was...
This morning, after I got the other one.
And
I had two tickets within half an hour this morning.
Were you in danger to traffic? I didn't
know. I made sure everyone who was coming towards me was stopped, and so I stopped in the middle of the street when they were going the other way and waited and then ran.
What did Officer Martin say to you?
Something like, don't do it again, you are endangering safety, and even if you're not in a vehicle, you can't go against the light. And I was probably on the wrong side of the street because I don't think they had a crosswalk on the side I was on.
This was near where you crossed the street to get to the Homeless Services Center at Highway 1 and Highway 9?
Yes.
Were you crossing, what, crossing at 1 or were you crossing 9?
I was crossing 29. Crossing 1 to get to about 100 feet up 9.
What time of day was it?
Between 8 and 9.
Busy traffic?
Not very. I didn't want to wait, though, because I hate cars.
Well, my suggestion with these tickets, as with all infraction tickets, is the first thing you do is you wait a couple weeks, because it takes that long to appear on the computer, maybe even longer. You go to the basement of the county building, which
room
is probably room 60, and then you go up to the window and you say, I want to disqualify Referee Mulligan, and they'll ask you to write that down and to write down the code section to use.
What about Patterson?
What about Patterson? Because my other infraction I have, Patterson because he's taking over from Mulligan.
You know, that I don't know Patterson's record. It's a good question. Perhaps I'm waiting. If anybody out there knows about, I guess it's Referee Patterson, I assume it's Referee, give a call to 423-HUFF, 423-4833. Let us know how he is treating people. Mulligan has a proven track record that is really deplorable. I would hope Patterson's is better. I don't know. I'm going to write down the code section for you, and again, I say it for the people out there. It's CCP 170.6. And what you do is you go up to the window, you hand them a letter, write down your name, the case name. You say, I wish to disqualify Mulligan. You write that down under code section 170.6 CCP.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anything else we need to talk about?
Don't know. I'm okay.
I'm okay.
It's about 7:10. We moved the table to in front of the hosts, which is closed, and the block, of course, is closed off. We're talking with
Jennifer Bezerra.
Jennifer, you just saw a colorful flyer with a picture of none other than Sergeant Lauren Butchie Sticky Fingers Baker. Now, you have a comment about him.
I just don't appreciate the way I get harassed by him. I've been harassed more than once by him, and the way he has no, like, people, he doesn't know how to socialize with people. He has no, like, people skills at all.
What form has this harassment taken?
Excuse me?
How has he harassed you?
One time I was walking my dog across that street right there.
Cathcart?
Yes, Cathcart. And my leash was too long, he said.
Your leash was too long?
My dog leash.
How long was your leash?
I think it was 6 feet, 7 feet.
And so did you get a ticket?
Yes, I did.
And you still have the ticket? What did you do with the ticket?
Oh, I went to court.
What happened with that?
I don't remember. I had to end up paying this fine. I was concerned, like, having, like, no, like dog leash or whatever. It was actually a chain that I had wrapped around my waist that I used as a leash. It wasn't, like, you know, bought at Petcoat or anything like that.
Well, you must buy the appropriate leash. You see, buying is important here on Pacific Avenue.
Yes, I noticed that.
Yes. Now, you say Baker has had other contacts with you?
Yes.
What were those?
I was riding my bike right on Cathcart too, same street. And he gave me a ticket for having my bike riding in downtown on my bike.
Now were you, what, on the sidewalk?
No, I was on the street.
So you were going the opposite direction of traffic?
I crossed and there was a whole kinds of people. It was an event between the Wine and Art Festival and I didn't know that was going on. I was coming off the bike trail and I went down on Cathcart from Front Street and then there was a whole bunch of people there. So like I cruised onto the sidewalk but off my bike just like with my legs, like between my bike. And just rolled it around, and he gave me a citation for that. Same man.
And what happened with that citation?
I got ticketed, and everybody thought it was ridiculous. And the cop that was there, I don't think he agreed with it because he walked away. And then people were, like, pretty shocked because it was between, the Wine and Art Gallery knows a lot of people out there, families.
Who are they? Pacific Trading Company is in the next block. They're the ones who eliminated the railing seating area so that now you have to sit on the rail, which is illegal, in the large planter on Walnut.
Well, good luck. Thank you.
We're talking with...
Excuse me?
What's your name?
Jennifer Bezerra.
And Jennifer, anything else, any other incidents with Sergeant Baker?
Just those two incidents, and I remember he was really rude.
Well, thank you very much. We're talking with...
James.
James, you had an unusual encounter in Palo Alto.
Yes, with the uniformed officers who were dispatched by a local resident who was also frolicking at the park, Park Avenue. And I was thought to be suspicious when she called in because I was not only smiling and laughing frequently, but I was also hitting a tennis ball. I was hitting a tennis ball.
Getting a tennis ball.
Hitting one with,
hitting.
With a tennis racket.
No, that's questionable.
That's what some people do at tennis courts. They actually break out a racket and they start hitting the ball. So for that reason, the police had to come out to investigate who I was because I was thought to possibly be a felon or someone who had outstanding warrants.
Well, you're an outstanding individual. I can see that.
Yeah.
You know what they say about Santa Cruz. It is illegal in Santa Cruz to bounce a rubber ball on the sidewalk.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yes. I'll show you the code. In downtown business district. Artist here.
People drive around downtown and they got for sale by owner signs on their cars. Why can't I have a for sale by owner sign on my backpack?
You're too poor, you're too short, and you're too old. And also, you're not pretty enough. Plus, you don't have enough money. You have any other questions, sir?
No.
All right, then. Talking with, first of all, with Tim Rinker. Tim, you had a conversation with Emily Riley, and what did she say to you?
Well, I asked her about the rumor on the street that about cracking down on the free food giveaways, and apparently she's not opposed to it necessarily. In fact, supposedly she used to donate to Food Not Bombs, but her concern was food being left over, which would attract rats, which meant somebody could get bitten by a rat. And
there are a couple of rats in city council that are biting us all the time. Did you say anything to say about that?
Those types of health concerns, supposedly.
Health concerns.
Although, you know, I'm more concerned with the health concerns of people being hungry. And I don't think rats are as big of a problem as she might think.
So she didn't deny that there was some planned crackdown going on. Have you found it yet?
Not directly, I don't think. But what I heard from another activist after I talked to Emily Riley, that supposedly it was an issue at
Downtown Association's Social and Legislative Committee meeting, according to Coral Brun, who was there and actually gave a report to Huff members later.
Right. And that apparently Mike Rotkin is on board, not for bringing new legislation, but for enforcing existing ordinances.
Maybe what you need to do now is contact Mike Rotkin to find out exactly what is in mind. Will you do that, Tim Rinker?
That may be necessary, yeah. It's
So it's Rotkin versus Rinker coming up next week, folks. Thank you, Jim.
Well, yeah.
So we're talking with Becky Johnson. Becky, you say that there are certain costs associated with this event.
Yeah, the Coalition for Community Commons was charged a pretty hefty fee for blocking the street off for 3 hours for one block area. The police, they had to pay $2,040 for police officers for the three events, because it's this Tuesday, next Tuesday, and the following Tuesday. Street closure fee of $300. Generator rental, $250. I guess that's a reasonable one there. Parking meter reimbursement of $153. Porta potties, $450. Banner creation, $100. Street barricades, $225. And a $99 sound permit.
That's for these 3 weeks of closures?
Yeah. For
3 nights of closure, actually.
3 nights of 3 hours each. So for a total of 9 hours of having these plastic cones put up and said, you know, that people have to kind of drive around this one block section. You know, they have to charge, you know, I haven't added it up, but it looks like over $3,000.
And we have a man who's chalking on the sidewalk in front of the hosts. Yeah.
And we'll be getting back to that criminal chalker who was confronted by the hosts and who in turn stood his ground. That was, I think, someone like, I think the man said his name was Matthew. What we're going to do now, though, is we're going to go to a civil rights advocate who has been speaking on our show regularly. Let's see if we can catch her on the air here. We're talking, of course, about attorney Kate Wells.
Hello.
Is this Kate Wells, attorney at law?
Yes.
And what are you doing on a Sunday there, Kate?
I'm sitting at my computer working away on an answer that's due on Monday.
Yeah, it's just
that's tomorrow, isn't it?
That's right. not day after. It's tomorrow.
Yeah.
But I noticed a story. I guess it was in Thursday's or Friday's paper concerning public defender, is it Bill Minkner?
Right.
And Bill apparently was defending a man named Pinto.
Osvaldo.
You want to tell us a little bit about the case? You've talked about it before, but I guess he's taking it one step beyond where it was now. Tell us a little bit about the Pinto case, could you?
Oh, boy. I don't know where to start. I guess it's been a couple of years now, almost, that Pinto was stopped by Officer Jason Nielsen, Sheriff's Deputy Nielsen. Pinto admits running from him initially. He had some warrants for him, but then he stopped and surrendered. And according to Nielsen, Pinto threatened him with a knife. No knife was ever found, and I'm sure that Pinto denies that there was any threat. And Officer Nielsen shot him in the stomach, a grazing wound to the stomach. An unarmed man who had surrendered to him. And so, of course, they turned around and charged Pinto with...
Wait a minute. Didn't Sheriff Mark Tracy immediately suspend him?
Yeah, he was... Well, they always do after a shooting, but then he was
then fired and prosecuted by D.A. Bob Lee, right?
Almost immediately exonerated. Now, I think this happened actually back in under Canlis's watch.
Ah, gotcha.
And of course, they immediately exonerated... Tracy immediately exonerated his little star lying deputy. And
wait a minute, how can you say he was lying? You weren't there, Kate.
Yeah. Well, there's several reasons why I believe he was lying. I have my own experience with Jason Nielsen when he was a rookie cop about 4 years ago, where he lied flat out on a police report, an incident report as to something that had happened right out here in front of my house. And I made a complaint against him for lying, as did three other people, filed declarations about the lies in this police report.
Now, these are the disappearing complaints that Judge Danner was unable to find, mysteriously, right?
Yeah. Yeah, when I found out that it was Jason Nielsen who was claiming this kid had threatened him with a knife, and I mean, it just sounded so implausible anyway, and then I saw it was Jason Nielsen, I thought, oh, okay, well, obviously it is implausible. So I called Minkner, who was defending Pinto, and I said, you know, I know myself and at least one other person had filed complaints against him for lying, and he says, well, don't worry about it, because I'm doing a pitches motion in court. Now, a pitches motion means that you're asking for any adverse reports in his file that deal with an issue that is an issue in the case. In other words, lying. So he said, I'm doing a pitcher's motion in front of Judge Danner, so don't worry about it. I'll get those reports. So he did his pitcher's motion. Judge Danner reviewed Jason Nielsen's internal affairs file.
In private, right?
Came back up on the bench and said, clean as a whistle. At which point, Bill Minkner said, well, geez, I know of two complaints that have been filed against him.
We're lying,
huh? Judge Danner went back to the internal affairs file and came back up on the bench and said, oh, my goodness, I must have just overlooked them.
But those weren't the only reports he had overlooked, right?
Pardon?
Those weren't the only reports he had overlooked.
Oh, no, they weren't the only reports that were overlooked. He then produced my complaint and Richard Quigley's complaint. At this point, Minkner didn't realize that we'd had declarations from other people as well. So he announced that he was going to have us as witnesses to show his proclivity for lying. And Danner, through a series of machinations, working closely together with District Attorney Jeff Rosell, who, by the way, he had hired back when he was DA, managed to keep me and Richard from testifying at his criminal trial. I guess I forgot to say that they had now charged him with resisting arrest and, I think, assault on a police officer, something like that.
He was attacking the police officer with his stomach, right?
Right. With an imaginary knife. Yeah. So, at any rate, they managed to keep me from testifying because I, of course, was prejudiced because I'm a civil rights attorney. and quickly because his testimony was going to take too long.
Ah, too long and a liar as well. Okay.
And obviously a liar.
Yeah.
So then I said, I said to Bill, what about the other two declarations? And he said, what other two declarations? So he went back to the judge, and lo and behold, they found an internal affairs file for Richard Quigley in the sheriff's department.
Now, this is unusual. We've talked about this on the air before. They usually keep internal affairs files on employees of the police department. I didn't know that Richard was an employee of the police. Is he really a secret agent?
If so, in the 25 years I've known him, he hasn't dropped any hints whatsoever. It's insane. But at any rate, these other two declarations were in his internal affairs file.
I see. So they had been, should we say, either misfiled or intentionally put in a file where they were not accessible if anybody was looking to look for people who complain about lying by Deputy Nielsen.
Yes, it was a black hole of complaints against Nielsen.
So we can't really blame Judge Danner for that? That would be more Mark Tracy or his underling in charge?
Well, that's an interesting thing because that became a real sore point in the case because the county counsel's office, in the way of Kim Baskett, came on the stand and testified that she had actually given those reports to Danner in the first place.
So you're saying that Art Danner had all the reports and in the first case missed your report and Quigley's report, and then in the second time missed the other two witnesses who came forward. Maybe he's just nearsighted. That could be it.
I guess. They were able to track down one of these people, and she was able to testify against Nielsen. She's a graduate student at UCSC.
Did that
the other piece of evidence that happened at the trial was that the state's expert witness had testified that Pinto had been very close to Jason Nielsen when Nielsen shot him. Now that was in the report. In Jason Nielsen's report, and of course was necessary in order to justify his shooting him. The defense expert got up and testified that the wound to Pinto's stomach was obviously not a close-range wound. There was no stippling around the wound, which would have shown the gunpowder burns. So at that point, the expert for the DA re-looked at the wounds and re-looked at the police report and got up on the stand and did something he's never done in the history of his career, and that is he recanted his testimony and agreed with the defense expert and said this was obviously not a close-range shot.
And so charges were immediately dismissed against Mr. Pinto, correct?
No, not. They continued to try him on both charges. And by the way, by this time he'd been in jail for over a year, year and a half.
Now the two charges were...
Pardon?
What were the two charges?
Resisting arrest, and I'm not sure if it was assault on a police officer or some other charge.
So this is sort of the Alice in Wonderland approach where they first punish you for a year and a half in jail and then they try you.
Right. That's well, and then there was a problem because in the midst of the trial, Bill Minkner became seriously ill and had to be rushed to the hospital up in Stanford where he languished for months, literally close to death. And in the meantime, they hired they appointed another attorney to Pinto. And this attorney tried to pressure him into taking a plea bargain. And Osvaldo, who has a checkered past, no doubt, absolutely refused to take a plea bargain. By the way, the plea bargain would have allowed him to be free the next day. He refused to plea bargain, stating that Jason Nielsen was lying, and he was telling the truth, and he wanted his day in court.
So
he wanted
was willing
trial.
To spend more than a year in jail on principle, in other words.
Yep.
And this is a man, this is a Spanish-speaking individual from Watsonville?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So he said he didn't want that attorney. He wanted Bill Minkner, who evidently Bill had already... actually, the trial had already started with Bill. So when Bill came back, he heroically took on this case again against his doctor's orders. His doctor said he wasn't ready for it, but he did it anyway. And Osvaldo was acquitted of the charge of the assault on the officer and found guilty of resisting arrest.
So what does that mean, Kate, that Osvaldo Pinto was found guilty of resisting arrest? Does that mean that he ran away? Was that the deal? Or
that's what the jury found, that he had run away. And he admitted that. He readily admitted that from the beginning.
But he said he later surrendered, right?
Exactly.
So he ran away and then he surrendered. So it was the initial running away that was resisting arrest.
Right. And by implication, by implication, they found that the jury found that Nielsen had been lying, that there was no assault on him, which would have justified him shooting him in the stomach.
Well, that he was lying or that there was just reasonable doubt that that had happened?
Well, by implication, he said that it happened and they said, no, it didn't.
So they, oh, I see. So in other words, they found that there was not enough evidence. They didn't believe him, in other words.
Mm-hmm.
Had they believed him, they would have found, well, they might have said, well, we believe you, but we need more than just your word because you're an interested party. In other words, what I'm trying to do is give him the benefit of the doubt here, which I probably shouldn't do because you're someone whom I know and whose judgment I respect, but I don't know him personally.
Yeah.
I'm just... Did you or did Mr. Minkner, as far as you know, speak with any jurors afterward who said, we thought he was lying, or the jury
yes.
thought he was lying?
Bill Minkner did. And did find jurors who said, absolutely, we found that he'd been lying. I mean, his story just was absolutely ridiculous. Especially in view of the fact that they said that he wasn't even close to Nielsen when he'd fired his gun at him. At best, in Nielsen's favor, probably would be the argument that it discharged accidentally. Which
maybe the gun flew out of his hand and hit him from a distance, similar to the way I guess Hennig shot what's his name in the Button Street case as he advanced with his back.
Oh, yeah, and McAuliffe, remember, his gun accidentally went off, but that guy who was in his car.
Oh, well, those things happen. Police officers, you know, you've got to trust your local police department. And
right.
Support
right.
them if you can.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, so at that point, Minkner immediately said, well, of course you're going to release him, aren't you, Your Honor? I mean, after all, this is a minor charge of running, I mean, the resisting arrest.
For which he served a year and a half, more than a year in jail already?
Absolutely. It was Christmas time, I recall, and this last Christmas, and it, evidently Danner ended up sentencing him to prison.
How long?
3 years.
For a resisting arrest. Is this what's the usual amount of time for resisting?
The usual amount of time for that kind of a minor resisting arrest, given his record, would have been reduced to a misdemeanor, and he would have had time served.
Right. Okay. Well, maybe Judge Danner, as a shrewder judge of human character, he saw through this sham principled year in jail that Pinto was trying to foist on the community.
Yeah. Well, you know, Pinto even offered at that point to go into rehab program, but that, of course, was rejected as well. So he is languishing in prison as we speak. And I guess Bill Minkner has just filed an action against the officer in the county for damages for
a civil lawsuit. Is that a hard thing to win if you've lost the court case? That sounds like it would be difficult, right?
Yeah, and it's something that I'm pretty distressed about because I don't know for a fact whether or not he appealed the decision. Resisting arrest in California is a unique animal. It's different from any other state. And several of us attorneys who do civil rights have found this out the hard way. You would think that you could have excessive force and still have a resisting arrest, right?
What do you mean you can have excessive force?
In other words, you initially resist, but then say, oh, no, and it's all right, and then he beats you up.
And then you could still be found guilty of resisting arrest in spite of the excessive force, you mean?
No. You'd think that would be the case.
Right.
In California, it's not true.
So it's
all part of the same arrest. If it's all part of the same arrest, then any kind of excessive force on the part of the officer completely makes the arrest null and void.
Mm-hmm. So but excessive force hasn't been proven, right? Even though they feel that he was lying about, I mean, a mere gunshot or two. I mean, police shoot all the time. It happens, you know. People attack you with a potato peeler in San Jose, and you got to take them out, right?
I thought it was it was a potato peeler in San Jose, and it was a wine.
Corkscrew in Seaside?
Corkscrew in Seaside, right.
Well, you know, police officers have got it, you know, that's why they wear those bulletproof vests. So you can never tell when you get run into some character.
Yeah, well, a guy was sitting on his roof with a corkscrew,
right.
And they killed him.
Yeah, I remember Charles, what's his name, Senior.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I was kind of struck that here is a defense lawyer filing a civil lawsuit, but you say you're not sure he's filed an appeal on behalf of Mr. Pinto.
Well, that's the problem. Therein lies the problem. If he hasn't appealed, then they will find that as a matter of law, the jury, by finding that he resisted arrest, found that the arrest was lawful. Because you can't have a lawful arrest if there's excessive force.
Oh, I see. So in other words, if they find the arrest is lawful, even if there was excessive force, then there wasn't excessive force.
Exactly.
It certainly is an interesting Lewis Carroll tale, isn't
it? Yeah, it's very complicated, and it's not true in any other, I'm not sure any other state, but the vast majority of the states, they allow you to say that even if the arrest was lawful, there can be excessive force.
Anything new on Richard Quigley and helmet law? I know he's been challenging that for a while.
Yeah, lots going on with the helmet law.
Yeah, you can tell us about it if you want, or we can talk about it next time, whichever feels good to you.
Well, let's talk about it next time, because it's pretty long.
Pretty gnarly.
Yeah.
Anything coming up this week that people should know about or check out on the legal scene, Kate?
My birthday.
And when is that? Come on, tell us when your birthday is.
My birthday tomorrow. I'm 1 day older than...
All right, everybody, send your checks, cards, and letters.
That's right,
well.
Yeah. I'm actually 1 day younger than Bill Clinton.
Oh, well, I will have to check Mr. Clinton's record.
Yeah, Bill and I are going out for our birthday.
And I'll be unzipping my doodah.
His is today, actually.
Oh, really? Well, happy birthday, Uncle Bill. And
happy birthday, Uncle Bill.
Yeah.
Okay,
hey,
thank you.
Thank you, Kate Wells.
Bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Kate Wells, attorney at law, giving us the update on the Pinto case, which got a little bit of an airing in the paper, Sentinel, last either Thursday or Friday, I believe it was, page 2. You're tuned to Free Radio, 96.3 FM. Looks like we're getting our first call of the day from the non-scheduled guest or non-guested scheduler. Or anyway, here's that call. Hi, you're on Free Radio. Hello?
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 Hi, is this Robert?
It is he.
Hey, this is Wiley.
Hey, Wiley Drake, the notorious First Baptist Church minister who puts up homeless people in his church in spite of... being found a misdemeanor person for doing so.
Well, we just keep on doing what we're doing.
So what's up down there in Buena Park, California? That's, I guess, a suburb of Los Angeles. You're experiencing some flack from the local police department yet again?
Yeah, every time we turn around, they try to find everything they can. If they come after me and they found me guilty, but then the judge let me off and, you know, so forth, and they don't like that. And so now they've decided, since... we have been somewhat successful in fighting their legal tirades, but they go after the homeless people. And one of the fellows that has gotten his life squared away and is living with us and working part-time and trying to get his life back together and helping us and so forth, recently has been harassed by the police and been in jail now almost a month, on the 20th, I believe it was, of last month. He left the church here on a Sunday afternoon to go visit a lady who... had befriended him, and he her, and not a girlfriend or anything, but just a friend, and he was going to help her move some stuff, and he rode his bicycle over into the neighborhood and then realized, wait a minute, I'm in the wrong neighborhood. Went back out of the neighborhood in the cul-de-sac and went over into the right neighborhood and then went to the house where she was at and found the house. And in the meantime, though, I guess a neighbor got suspicious. He has long hair. He looks like an old hippie. He's got long hair, long beard. And when he left the home after he visited with his friend, then the police stopped him and said, we want to talk to you. And he said, what about? And they said, well, we're investigating. We think you've been casing a neighborhood. And he said, well, what do you mean, casing a neighborhood? And they talked to him for a minute. And finally, he said, look, I don't think I want to go any further. I don't want to talk about this anymore without a lawyer. And they said, well, you can't have a lawyer until we finish our investigation.
Oh, right.
So anyway, he said, well, I'm not talking to you anymore. And then so they harassed him a while. And finally they decided that they had no case, that there was nothing other than one person said they saw this long-haired hippie-looking dude in the neighborhood and act like he was casing the place, which he wasn't. He was looking for an address. And so anyway, they couldn't arrest him for that, so they arrested him for obstructing the duty of a police officer and resisting arrest because he wouldn't talk to them and he wouldn't.
Now, wait a minute.
He was taken to in custody and put in Orange County Jail and then was arraigned. And when he was arraigned, the district attorney said, well, look, why don't you just plea and just...
plead guilty.
Admit that you're guilty, and we'll get the judge to let you go home. You go home right now. You just plead guilty, and he'll give you time served, and you'll be out of here and back on the street. And he said, no, I'm not guilty. I'm not pleading anything. So then when he went before the judge basically said, evidently, if you don't want to accept this deal and you don't like this deal, well, you must not be totally sane. Therefore, I'm going to issue an order that you go listen. You meet with the... psychiatrist there in jail. And he said, no, I'm not meeting with a psychiatrist. I'm sane. I don't need one. Don't want one. And so they put him on suicide watch and put him in solitary confinement. And he is Jewish by tradition and needs a kosher meal and those kind of things. And he's asked for that. And they roughed him up in jail, and he's asked for medical attention, and they won't give him that. And
what's
so,
his name?
He's just, you know, a victim of this Gestapo kind of treatment that is very prevalent here in Buena Park and sort of supported by the Orange County Sheriff Department.
What is his name, Wiley?
His name is Conrad Carl Rieger, R-I-E-G-E-R, Conrad Carl Rieger.
And what is the phone number of the jail and the chief of police office? You have those two phone numbers?
Well, I'm afraid I don't have that in front of me. You caught me sort of off guard.
Why don't
the
you...
Orange County...
Yeah. Why don't you get them to me by email, and we'll put out an email to people encouraging them to call the county jail to ask what's been happening with him, what his visiting hours are, and also perhaps the district attorney's number as well would be good, so we can encourage them to drop the charges. Is he being held on a psych ward? Is that the story?
He's in a they take him off and on depending upon what kind of mood they're in. They've had him in a what's called a suicide watch, and they're saying he's nuts, and he's not. He's very sane. He just won't put up with their nonsense,
And how do you think that you don't think he's a suicidal person yourself?
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not.
How long have you known him?
Oh, probably about 3 years. Probably closer to five.
Huh. And is he a working person or not?
He works part time. He's very intellectual in that sense. He's not like a dummy on the street. He spends a great deal of time in the library. He was at the library. He has had a previous case with Fullerton police, the University of Fullerton, University of California and Fullerton police arrested him at one time, and it went to court. And again, he was accused of the same thing, of resisting arrest and all that kind of stuff. And the charges, when it went to court, the charges were dropped because for lack of evidence. And so he just refuses to be Gestapo'd, and these police decide they're going to go after him, and they've done it again.
And they know him, of course, to be a user of your services and a friend of yours.
Beg your pardon?
They know him to be a user of your services and a friend of yours.
Oh, absolutely, and they know that he works for me and works with us, and he's pretty big in the proportion. He's a big, tall dude, big, not fat or anything, but a big guy. And
black guy, white
sort of,
guy, Hispanic?
He takes care of me, tries to keep people from beating up on me.
Uh-huh, sort of your bodyguard, perhaps?
Yeah,
huh.
Absolutely, because, see, I've had many, many death threats against me. I've had 6 attempts on my life in the last few years.
Really?
Not too many months ago, a couple of months ago, I ended up with a broken nose and 2 black eyes. And so, I have a reason to think that,
huh.
I might need a little protection.
Well, it sounds like, and you're not even in Iraq shooting Iraqi people.
No, no, it's right here. I just got back from Alabama. You probably have heard about the
Ten Commandments
Judge Moore incident down there.
That on that one, we probably take a different position, but feel free
probably,
to speak about it if you want.
But that's okay.
Yeah,
we can agree to disagree,
sure,
gentlemen.
Of course we can. No, I'm not trying to shut you up on it either. I just wanted to ask you before you get onto that, if you want to talk about that. Has your own church, and I know you were the subject of massive harassment under zoning laws in the mid-90s, and again more recently, are they letting some 200 people who you allow to sleep in your church each night, if that's still the number, to do that without further harassment, other than this, apparently they went after this?
It goes, we go for weeks or maybe even months sometime with no harassment, and then we get one like this, and then when they just sort of sit around with nothing else to do, come down and harass us,
Wow, what about the local community or perhaps the civil rights groups? The ACLU has leapt into the fray, no doubt, right?
Well, they've chosen to stay out of it because obviously, as you said in reference to some things, we have some agreement to disagree, and so when they disagree, they've chosen basically to sort of take hands off on us.
Well, they may disagree with what you think about the rights of, same-sex partners in Disneyland or the Ten Commandments on public property. That may be a disagreement with you, but certainly I would hope they wouldn't disagree with you about the right of a poor person not to be held in jail by police without due process in the way that sounds
like. Well, they certainly, if you were to push them in the corner, I'm sure they would say, yes, number one, we disagree with Wiley on the other things, but number two, we wouldn't disagree in this area, but they just won't get involved.
What about homeless organizations like the LA Coalition Against Hunger and Homelessness?
So far, they've chosen the same thing. You know, we've made them aware of what's going on. Everybody knows, but they've chosen just to basically say, we don't want to be involved.
What about those turkeys up at Huff in Santa Cruz?
Well, we've gotten some good support from people, you know, on radio and other places, but as far as legal, nothing there.
Huh. Well, what I'm going to ask you to do, Wiley, again, is send me the appropriate contact numbers. I'll put them out in a report, both locally and to the California Homeless Civil Rights Organizing Project, or CCRAP,
okay,
as I call it, which hasn't been doing too much, but, you know, and see if they can maybe put in a word from the different homeless groups. I'm sure that some independent homeless groups would like to.
All right, give me the email to send it to.
Sure, send it, and this, of course, goes to anybody out there who wants to email me. I'm at rnorse@hotmail.com.
Okay.
And so give me a call. Anything else you'd like to talk about, Wiley?
Well, no, that's just it. You know, we're just continuing to help the poor and the homeless and do our best, and obviously we have another organization coming into our town, a global organization that takes food and supplies all over the world, and they have been had eminent domain declared against them in the city of Placentia, and they're moving into Buena Park, and so I'm sure we're going to see some flack from that because the city doesn't want another homeless organization here in town.
Oh, what is it called? What's the name of the group?
It's called Global, and I don't remember the rest of the name, but they send big containers of food all over the world.
Not Global.
I'll get that information to you as well.
Okie doke. Hey, well, thank you, Wiley, and we've been talking with Wiley Drake, who's pastor of the First Baptist Church of Buena Park, if I'm not mistaken. All right. Well, we got about half an hour left here on Free Radio. You're tuned to 96.3 FM, and our call-in number, if you want to reach us, is 427-3772, us being me and the many people out there listening, if there are, who knows, I can never tell how many folks are out there listening. You can tune to us also at www.freakradio.org, emails frsc@freakradio.org, voicemail 427-4523, checks payable to Free Radio Santa Cruz or FRSC, and sent to P.O. Box 7507, Santa Cruz, California, 95061.
Lady, what do you do all day? Lady, how do you spend your time? Lady,
got no time to be standing here gabbling, got no time to be answering. Beds need making, the dishes need washing, and venting me dusting and polishing. Scrubbing and sweeping and sewing and cleaning and cooking and ironing. Are you listening? I'm a production line all by myself, only the wages are missing. Three kids of 8 and 7 and 2, leisure is just a mythology. When it's over my head, I can't go to bed, it's temper or else psychology. Mary's bedwetting and Tommy is jealous, the baby is yelling, he's driving me crazy. I'm nursing the nanny until I'm a granny, but why is it nobody pays me? I care for a lovely old mother-in-law, she's 87 and cranky. Husband's home with a feverish cold, run for the tea and the hankies, the hot water bottle, a telly, the paper, and now the kids have it, it must be contagious. So now I'm the family medical staff, but where the hell are my wages? If wives and mothers all took to their heels, you'd soon be needing an army. And paying them all their union wages, I bet it would drive you barmy. All eyes and ears, hands and feet, my finest gem, and he should have been two of me. I'd do the work of a dozen a day, but where are the wages due to me? Prices so high, wages so low, budgeting must be meticulous. The hours I spend in looking for bargains and crooking them's really ridiculous. And though my man's doing all that he can, what he brings home isn't making ends meet. And I'll have to go out for a wage myself if the family's gonna keep eating. Turn overalls or a 20 years to teach her to want to be a wife, to find and hold another human who must keep her all his life. Because she works for nothing, he'll get a lower wage. If she were not dependent, they might fly out of their cage. A true-born man seeks a lover and may end up with a slave. Up in the morning before all the family get the grub on the table. Beds need making, the dishes need washing, it's everything done on the double. Drop the kids off at the school and run from a bus. Don't you think it's outrageous? I've more than enough with my labor of love. Now I'm doing another for wages. The boss is as good as a boss can be, but the office is just like a nursery. Smoothing his life, soothing his trouble, remembering his anniversary. Remind and worry and hurry and scurry and into the frying pan, out of the cage, and it's home from home wherever I roam. But at least I'm getting my wages. On my way home, I shop for the dinner and then have a tidy around. Billy comes in, sits down with the paper, says, girl, don't you ever sit down. Man of the world, would you think it was strange? Think it was right? Think it was funny to slog every night at a job for free after slogging all day for your money?
Oh, I don't work. I'm nothing but a housewife.
That's the famous Peggy Seeger and Ewan McCall, Different, Therefore Equal, the song What Did You Do All Day? Old album, great song. Phone lines are open, 427-3772. I'm looking right now at the Anderson Valley Advertiser. We're going to read a little bit of the article I like to read each week when I have time, just barely this time. This is from Cannabinoids. Proposition S Proceeds Apace by Fred Gardner. In November 2002, 63% of San Francisco voters voted yes on Proposition S, a one-sentence policy question. Should the city explore the possibility of growing and dispensing medical cannabis? The two key organizers of the task force that promulgated Proposition S, Wayne Justman and Michael Aldrich, had been proprietors at medical marijuana dispensaries. The measure was put on the ballot in light of the recent DEA crackdown on local medical cannabis clubs, put on the ballot by four city supervisors, Mark Leno, now a state assemblyman, Matt Gonzalez, now president of the board, Sophie Maxwell, and Chris Daly. Following the passage of Proposition S, at least five reform organizations took part in meetings to plan its implementation. The dominant organization in the planning process has been the Drug Policy Association, looks like. The DPA contracted with a professional campaign consultant, Ellie Sue Schaefer, who rented space at the Unitarian Church on Franklin Street and Geary Boulevard for a community forum on implementation of Proposition S, which was held July 22nd. All the major mayoral candidates, Supervisors Tom Emiano and Gavin Newsom, Treasurer Susan Leal, former Supervisor Angela Alioto, and former Police Chief Anthony Rivera, sought to outdo each other in expressing support for Proposition S at the July 22nd forum. Questions put to the candidates reflected a willingness to challenge federal law. Robin Few of Americans for Safe Access asked candidate Alioto